challenge, and it is one entire log for all ages, babies, toddlers, teenagers, 90-year-olds, everybody can do this challenge. And because we're running out of time, I won't go too much into it, but it's if you want to find out more, we do give out logs anytime that you request materials from the library. And we also have the website, mykpl.info/summer-reading.
Great. Okay, so everyone will put that on the Facebook page so you can access it. Thank you to my guests from Kenosha Public Library, Heather Thompson, Head of Youth and Family Services, Marcia Sear, Head of Outreach Services, and Brandi Cummings, the Communication Specialist for Kenosha Public Library. This is WGTD Education Matters. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenaya Quinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
And welcome to WGTD's Community Laura. And I'm delighted to introduce a series that will be running periodically on Community Matters about recognizing racism. I'm excited to say that this first installment of the series includes two wonderful guests, Mary Pucci and Kelly Scroggins-Powell, who have created a presence on Facebook to bring together all kinds of women from the Racine area called Racine Women for Racial Justice. And I'd like you to understand the story behind this group that's forming and what has transpired since these two friends have come together to try to create justice in our area. And so welcome this morning to both of you.
Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome. And Mary, I wonder if you could start our conversation this morning by just introducing yourself a little bit. Tell us about yourself.
Okay. I would like to say that I'm 50 years old. I don't want to brag about my age, but I think that's kind of an important aspect to all of this, that I'm starting kind of my really active fight for racial justice at this point in my life. And this is after growing up in Cedarburg, Wisconsin, which is about 25 miles north of Milwaukee. And that was a very much a community back in the 70s and 80s anyway of white, upper middle class, Christian folks. So my exposure or lived experience to anything outside of my own race was minimal to none. So that is how I grew up. What brought me to Racine and a very different lived experience is that when I was attending UW-Madison, getting my college degree, I met a local of Racine, my husband now. And he, from day one in our relationship, was a blessing to me in that he would challenge things that I said or felt or acted upon instinctively as, you know, biased thinking. And this is something that I had never experienced in my life growing up in Cedarburg, someone that would challenge the way I feel about, you know, diversity and things. So I moved to Racine in 95, and I loved the community. I loved living in a diverse community. And that's kind of where the journey began for me, that I, for the first time in my life, could say I had Black friends who I loved and adored, who I raised my children with, who we, you know, went to school together, played in organized sports together. And it was just such a rich, full life for me. And I'm just much happier in Racine than I than I ever have been anywhere else.
Oh, that's wonderful. And Kelly, tell us a little bit about you.
I guess, you know, when I think about who I am, I think of myself in terms of the many pieces of me, the many facets of who I am. You know, I'm a Black woman. I'm a mother. I'm a minister. I'm an entrepreneur. You're like, so like I'm all of those things. I'm a member of Racine, the second worst place in America to live for African Americans, you know. I grew up here in Racine. I was educated in parochial schools here in Racine, where I faced racism on a daily basis, you know. I've spent the last 30 years working in nonprofit organizations with people, my people, who were labeled disadvantaged, disenfranchised, marginalized, but they were Black Indigenous people of color. And so this work for me is not new. It's been my life's work, because all of my life I've been on the end of some form of racial injustice, to one end or the other. And so I think all of those many pieces of me have positioned me perfectly to be at the heart of this kind of work, this kind of fight for equity. And I'm glad to be at this place of my life where I can devote so much time, energy, and effort to this work that has been described by many as a heavy lift. And so, yeah, I'm just really grateful to be a part of this. So I guess that's who I am. You know, I'm the sum total of all of those things, including my lived experiences.
Wonderful. Can you explain how the two of you met? What brought you together?
Well, the group itself, we didn't meet until the group was formed.
Oh, okay.
And so to back up on a little bit on how the group was formed, it was on the heels of the announcement back on September 18th, 2019, that no charges were going to be filed against a Mount Pleasant police officer who shot and killed a young Black man named Tyrese West. That spawned outrage and sadness and despair throughout our community. And I took to Facebook the following day after that announcement, on September 19th, just sort of unconsciously expressing my feelings about it, and that knowing, you know, being very cognizant of that my feelings about it were those of a white woman, and that I didn't know how to help, but I knew I had to, and it just was time to stop being on the sidelines with this stuff and be more active in the fight for racial justice. I said, I don't know what that's going to look like, but I welcome anyone's partnership and participation in it. And so the post itself got a lot of response. And I have to say, I was surprised. After I posted, I said, oh, I'm sure people are going to, you know, crickets, typical, or not say much, but it was an overwhelming response. And I noticed it was all from women. And so that very day, I committed to the organization of just a Facebook group so that we could talk about the issues online in a private space and invite whomever we think would be, you know, also interested in participating. So that grew pretty quickly and immediately. So it was shortly thereafter that Kelly reached out to me, probably via Messenger first, and asked if we could have a phone call and that she'd like to share her experience in this sort of work and lend it to the effort or cause if, you know, if we found that we were a good fit. So that was the beginning of our friendship and collaboration in this work.
What, Kelly, what did you say to Mary that, how did you present yourself to her and how did you share your experiences? I think many of us, those of us who are white, don't, haven't obviously had the kinds of experiences that you expressed even in introducing yourself. And we oftentimes unknowingly miss what's happening around us that causes pain to others in terms of a bias that we demonstrate both societal and individually. What did you share with Mary? And could you share some of that with our listeners to kind of move us along in a greater understanding of what it is to be a Black woman living in Racine?
You know, to be honest with you, Laura, I really don't remember what I said exactly, but I can tell you what was going on with me at that time. I did not know Tyrese West. I did not know his mother. To this day, I've not had the pleasure of meeting her. But what I can tell you is that I cried for her baby. I cried for her. I had nightmares. I woke up with images of her son in my head. And it hit me in a place that I hadn't really fully been or understood in such a long time. You know, when you hear about situations happening in Baltimore, Maryland, and other cities, and, you know, across the state, it becomes those people, their city. But when I got the news about Tyrese West and the pictures began to disseminate over social media, my heart broke. So here I am at home, I'm having nightmares. And so I don't know exactly what I said to Mary, but I'm almost sure it went something like this. Like, I'm a Black woman, I say that again, you know, and I'm a mother. And I didn't know what it felt like to be her, but I know that I was so moved by their pain. And I was so, so hurt and so angry that to this day, I still feel like justice was not served. So when Mary made that post, I just knew that it was important for me to be a part of the equation. It was important for me to be a part of the solution. And I've said this to Mary, you know, many times. I did not want this space, Racine Women for Racial Justice, a group that was, you know, growing rapidly, that had a strong presence of white women. I did not want this to be another space where white women didn't hear our voice. They didn't know our story. They didn't know our pain. And so I knew that I had to be a part of this conversation if it was going to be authentic and if it was going to lead to some type of real change. And I just wanted in on it. I knew it was going to become something, and I wanted to be a part of it.
Can you give us an idea of the scope of response that you've gotten? I know it's grown quite a bit since the George Floyd murder, but can you describe kind of the growth in response, and then what kind of voices had you started to hear emerge in the postings that people would make?
So prior to our march on Tuesday, June 2nd, we had a membership of approximately 660 women. We have always had a large waiting room, you know, because we do some screening of member requests, and unless they answer the questions, they're not accepted. So in that waiting room at that time, we had over 300.
Could you describe a little bit about what kind of expectations you have of people to get that far? You know,
It's very simple. We just want to identify their connection to Racine, because we want to keep our efforts very local and community based. And we want to ensure that people that are joining our group are either, you know, live here, work here, connected here through family, friends. They have some sort of vested interest in our community. And then the second question, and we're fine tuning this a bit and adding some additional questions now that the requests have really exploded. But the second question at that point in time was, why do you want to join the group? So kind of giving us a reason, why they have the interest in racial justice. And so, you know, that can be anything from someone's lived experience to, you know, a lot of white women like myself saying, I just know I need to do more and I need to be more involved in this cause. And then, you know, black women, of course, come from a completely different vantage point. We also have a lot of Latinx women. And we love that we do. And the diversity in our group is really great. It's really good. Since the march, we've received over 800 additional requests. So that was spellbinding a little bit to us, and it was amazing that because we had so many people show up at that march, there were, I think if I had to calculate, I don't know, I thought we had close to 1,000 people, so many of them said they learned about us at the march. So that was really, I think that showed an impact that we made that we didn't even know we could make. And then the last 2 weeks have been a bit surreal because the growth has been nuts. But Kelly, did you want to share a little bit about the different voices we hear in the group?
Yeah, I think you pretty much, you know, just said it. You know, the presence is definitely diverse, you know, diverse races and even classes. You know, we mm-hmm. we have a great combination of women from various economic statuses, which I think is so important in this work, you know. And our Facebook page has just grown exponentially. Of course, it's caused us to have to, you know, take another look and examine what that social media page looks like in contrast to the work that we want to do as an organized group. But yeah, this Facebook page has just been phenomenal in this exponential growth. Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to stop you both there just to kind of backtrack a little bit and just repeat a little bit of what happened June 2nd. The Racine Women for Racial Justice group that you both led a peaceful protest march from 10th and Main Street to the courthouse steps. And I would agree with you, Mary, there were easily 1,000 people at that protest march, which was an incredible collection of all of Racine, very much peaceful but very fervent in desire for justice. And of course, that march came on the heels of the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis a week earlier. And that seemed to be a real turning point, not only in Racine, but in the nation, for us to stop and reconsider what we do in creating systems of injustice and how to turn them around and create justice for all people in our communities. I happened to be there that day, and it was quite overwhelming. And overwhelmingly beautiful in the midst of a terrible tragedy and awakening in our country. And I think from talking with many of the people around me, we all had a sense of solidarity and purpose at that time. Mm-hmm. Since that time, so much has cascaded onto your Facebook page. Some real depth of sharing that has been there probably from the beginning, but is probably getting more notice now because of the events in our country, where things that many of the white women who are part of the group start to be discovered through the voices of their Black sisters who are posting, this is what it means to drive here in this country. This is what it means to live here. And many of the voices and experiences are quite touching, and things that I think are often hidden in a society that says, well, this is the norm, right? So this other stuff can't be happening. Can you maybe walk our listeners who haven't had the privilege of being part of your Facebook group, can you walk us through some of those experiences that you've seen or discovered among the women who have joined your group?
Sure, I can. Let me take that one first. Firstly, I want to say that I learn something every day. So I come to this with little to no racial justice work experience, except that I've consider myself a concerned citizen, right, over the last decade or two decades, but I never actively did racial justice work. So I've never had the opportunity beyond a handful of friendships with Black women to really hear such personal stories and accounts about the lived experience of a Black person in this country and in my community. So I learn something every day. And the dynamic, I think, that speaks to me the most loudly is that we need to, as white people, white women in our group, just listen and stop being offended if something lands on your ears, you know, wrong. And sometimes it's like, ouch, oh, that one hurts, you know, or instinct to defend why you would do that or say something like that. But it has been the most awakening experience of my life. And it's all been since September, you know, of 2019. So the growth I gain from this group is without bounds. I know I have to just continually keep growing, but some specifics, stories, I mean, everything from the way our Black women in our group feel, how they're kind of characterized as angry Black women, for instance. That comes up a lot. I never knew that Black women felt they need to, speak calmly, or, you know, even in cases of injustice, or being a victim of racism, you know, stay calm so you're not interpreted as an angry Black woman. All of the racism and ickiness lack of better terms, around Black women's hair. I had no idea. I mean, I've always found it an interesting topic. I know there's documentaries about Black women's hair, but just the insensitivity and the hatred really felt by Black women towards Black women's hair and natural hair. Those are just two very specific smaller issues, but just learning those things every day and learning tens of them by the day is been so valuable to me. And that we've earned the trust of Black women in our group is the most valuable. That they have been granted a space, hopefully, with, you know, the best management we can provide, of course, where they feel they can share personal lived experience and be vulnerable. That's of the utmost importance to me.
Yeah, Kelly, you started our conversation describing a little bit about what it was to grow up here in Racine, and I know from earlier discussions between you and I that you had also moved away for a while and come back. Would you be comfortable in sharing some of your experiences here in Racine that other people need to hear?
Sure. But if I could just kind of backtrack a little bit when we talked about the outrage, the protesting and marching that you see going on by Black people in particular, it's always interesting to me that I hear people say because of George Floyd. And I need people to understand that George Floyd, for many of us, was just a straw that broke the camel's back. We were fortunate in that George Floyd's murder, modern day lynching, was caught on tape from beginning to end. It was recorded from beginning to end by multiple people being present. You know, so that's what I feel brought about some of this white enlightenment that we're seeing. Because for us, the reason why it has led to the types of marches and protests that we are seeing is because George Floyd is not the first one for us. He's not. And that's what was so hurting, so angry, make people so angry, because we are at a point to where we are just sick and tired of this type of maltreatment, you know, towards us. And so that's why we're seeing this unrest. It's not just because of one isolated incident. Absolutely not.
No, and I think one of the most powerful things of the march that day was, you know, the chants. They say their name and the response, which one? You know, so many people had not known what happened to Sandra Bland or known what happened to Trayvon Martin, or, you know, you can name, there are so many people, even in this small space of time in recent years, which is the tip of the iceberg, that I think a wider group of us are starting to recognize, these are not isolated cases. There is a pattern here, and it's unjust, and something must be done. And that was the last straw, right? Yeah. Really slow in recognizing this.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that even at our march, I think that's how I kind of opened up. I just kind of just recited the names of so many, you know, people of color that had died at the hands of law enforcement. And so, yeah, but I do want to answer the question that you asked about what it has been like for me growing up in Racine. First of all, I want to say that I have adult children that grew up here probably until their early teens. And one of the things that my kids thank me for, they thank me for taking them away from Racine. And for me, that's kind of bittersweet, because here's the paradox of all of this. I love Racine. Like some of my fondest dreams, fondest memories. We have some of the best food and our beaches and, you know, all of the memories of our 4th of July parade, like all of the things that I absolutely love in life are here in Racine. But the truth of the matter, of the bigger picture, is Racine was also the place where I talked about being educated in private parochial schools. And Racine was the place where I was one of about 10 children of color in a predominantly white private parochial school where the rest of the students were white and affluent. The types of injustices that I faced as a child that I wasn't fully cognizant of, but I knew something was wrong. So when we had to do oral book reports, and I was not allowed to give any more book reports about African-American authors because I was told by my white nun that I'm always reading those kinds of books. So that they called my mother and told my mother to discourage me from reading those kinds of books. So much so that our school took those kinds of books out of our school library. You know, so as a young Black child growing up in Racine and growing up in the school system where the only history that we were taught was white history, and I'm real grateful for a mother who allowed me to go to the Racine Public Library on Saturdays. And even to this day, I have a vast library in my home because I have always loved to read, because that was one of the things that, you know, I was kind of discouraged from. When I think about other situations in Racine, you know, looking at the difference between the people that I went to school with, the white children that I went to school with, that we had the same education. In fact, I excelled or accelerated in most instances, right? And so when I changed schools and went to a public school, my mom had to fight tooth and nail to get the RUSD school system to put me into accelerated honors programs, because even though I had report cards from St. Catherine's High School with predominantly A's and B's, and I had been, you know, educated and had always done very well, they didn't think that the accelerated honors program was a place for me. So I was forced to take general classes for a semester to prove that I could handle it. You know, my report card, my academic record was not enough. You know, just thinking about those types of injustices that people of color face every single day, that people tend to overlook because they don't make the media, because there's not a headline in a newspaper. You know, even one of the things that I talk about after leaving Wisconsin and being gone for a while, when I returned to Wisconsin, even with my resume, even with my education and all of my skills and experiences, I had to go to Milwaukee in order to get a job on the professional level that I work in to be able to receive the kind of pay you know, that was equal to some of the white women, white people that work here in Racine. So why is it that I had to go to Milwaukee to head a nonprofit organization when there are many here that serve people of color? And so looking at the disparities in employment, you know, housing, there just been so many, you know, that we could go on and on, you know, racial profiling. You know, my son came here to visit just last summer, he and my nephew were riding in a car, and I get a frantic call because they've been pulled over by the police. And by the time I get to the scene, they're slammed on the ground. The officer is cussing at them, calling them out of their names. He's irate and upset because my son told him that he doesn't have a felony. And he said, "What, a Black man in Racine and you don't have a felony? Sure you do." You know, so those are just one of so many stories, Laura.
And those stories need to have hearing. They need to have air. They need a place where those of us who live in this city who don't encounter those kinds of experiences get to understand that they are very real. And these are, I hear the pain in your voice. It is not, as you had mentioned earlier, happening somewhere else. This is our problem. This is our town. We need to all fix it together. This isn't somewhere on some coast somewhere. To have your son come visit you and have an experience like that is dreadful. And you understand then how, when you hear that, any mother would, how unjust our systems are, and how we are so socialized to accept that as the norm, right? If you are not encountering it. So so let me apologize. I am so sorry that happened. And I see now, and now we need to act, right? There are so few things that I think sometimes I can reach to for response when I hear such a heartrending experience such as yours, other than I am sorry, I see you, and I want to act to change.
And I think that's what we want. You know, even when Mary talked about the label of the angry Black woman, you know, people say things to us like, boy, she sure was emotional, you know. But there's a book that's entitled So You Want to Talk About Race. And in it, she says that racial oppression should always be an emotional topic to discuss. It should always be anger inducing. And as long as racism exists to ruin lives of countless people of color, it should be something that upsets us, you know? And it doesn't upset us because it exists. We're upset because it exists and not because we talk about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you have created through this wonderful Facebook group, at least a forum, a starting place for these kinds of emotional exchanges, right? What happens from here?
We have begun the, you know, official organization to become a nonprofit. So again, you know, borrowing Kelly's expertise in all things nonprofit, she's been critical in getting us moving in that direction. We have people that are interested in supporting us financially. We need to have that, you know, structure in place so that we can graciously accept their support. Just the fact that we have so many people reaching out asking how they can support us before we are even, you know, the official entity speaks so loudly to us, that we are, this group is feeling some sort of niche that needed to be filled. Whether it's that we're uniquely women, maybe, because it's not that people haven't been doing racial justice work in this community. They have for many, many, many years. But for whatever reason, and we're still trying to get a handle on that, our group has gained a very quick and rapid momentum and level of enthusiasm. And that could just be kind of the perfect timing of what seems to be a national and / international movement as well. You know, it just, for instance, at the march last week or 2 weeks ago, just the number of young people in attendance, and I'm sure you'll recall, Laura, the number of white people in attendance, and mentioned by one of my Black friends, the number of Latinx people in attendance was more than she had ever seen at any sort of, you know, Black racial justice protest. It seems like there's a lot intersecting right now that is new and different, and it's a new level of energy for the cause. And so I don't know how serendipitous it is that we created this group and this is all happening at the same time, or if, you know, our group just provides something that needed to be provided. Do you have thoughts on that, Kelly?
Well, yeah, you know, I think one of the things that I really just kind of wanted to say is that we started off as a Facebook or social media page, and it was a place for people, women of different colors, to come together, to have these emotional exchanges, to have these courageous conversations. But through that, the work that we are now the work that we are now committing to is work that is strategic. We are developing strategic plans on how, as an organization, we can come up with some real action steps that are measurable, that have real outcomes, so that we're not just a social media group of women with nothing else to do besides get on Facebook and rage. We have every intention on impacting this racial justice work that needs to be done in Racine. Like Mary said, it has been going on so long by others, and our job or our goal is not to replace, but to supplement, to support, to lend ourselves to some of that work. I think this group came along at the right time. You know, I think it's, I just think that's what happened. I think it was divine, too. I don't think it was by happenstance or coincidence either.
I would agree. We're quickly heading to the end of our time together today. So I'd just like to ask, if somebody were interested in standing with you and taking action with you at this juncture of your formation as a solidified group, what should they do?
Mary?
Sure. Firstly, you can join the Facebook page. That's kind of the entryway into the group. But as part of the organization of the nonprofit, we will have an official membership process where you can be a member. And then that might involve, and again, still defining a lot of the details here, but that will most likely involve a membership, an annual membership fee. And then we know that if you have gone beyond the social media platform of our group to now wanting to be an active member of our organization, that tells us that you are on the action side of things, that we can inventory your skills and your talents and your interests, and you fit you hopefully on a action team, and we have many ideas, and so that you're doing what you kind of feel is the best fit for you within our organization.
Well, I tell you, I am so delighted that the two of you have taken time this morning to talk with us and to explain to our listeners a little bit about Racine Women for Racial Justice, a little bit about yourself. For those of you who are listening, who are interested in connecting with the group, it is on a Facebook page, a Facebook group that you can look for on Facebook, Racine Women for Racial Justice. And I look forward to continuing our conversation as you grow and develop your strategic plans, because there is much work to be done, and we know it won't happen quickly. I thank you for all your efforts in calling us to justice in Racine and beyond. So thank you for spending time with me this morning.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. WGTD's morning show. Insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It always makes for a better interview, for at least for the author, when the interviewer has actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer. My gosh.
You really made me think. You really read the book.
Yeah. No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out some really great points.
Greg Berg hosts the morning show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD.
All this week on WGTD's Noon Tunes, we're featuring the music of Kenosha singer-songwriter Anna Nuzzo.